I'd like to call this meeting to order.
You want to do a roll call vote, John?
Sure. Member Barnage.
Here.
Member Gehring.
Here.
Member Bright.
Here.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Talley.
Here.
Vice Chair Lucy.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Is there any public comment? Okay. Hearing none, can we go back through the meeting minutes of July 16th? Does anybody have any changes they'd like to add to these minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to abstain. I wasn't here at that meeting.
Okay. Let the minutes reflect that John Wallace and myself will abstain. I wasn't here at that meeting as well.
Now I move approval.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great. Okay, next item.
Was the second member Barnage?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have to do a roll call on the minutes?
No.
Under the new Brown Act? No?
Not that I know of.
Okay. All right, operations reports. The water plant operations.
Yes, Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. Current, I don't know, I just did it in a million gallons a day, 3.7. So it's been the same for a couple weeks or so.
Mark says it's 6. Okay.
Thanks.
6.
Thanks.
Ish.
Okay, Annie. So we're on to good evening, everyone. Sorry to be late. I appreciate you kicking off the meeting. Thank you. So we're on to item number 5, Mr.
Yes,
Diodati.
Yes, 5A. And okay. The fourth quarter update will be done by Jennifer Colbert.
I'm not sure if is it on?
Didn't sound like it.
I can talk really loud.
Okay.
That's what my kids tell me.
Sometimes this helps.
Testing, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Attached in your packets, a copy of the fourth quarter report for 13-14. Flood Zone 3 expenses were under budget by approximately 27% at year-end. In your handout, there are three graphs reflecting the fourth quarter budget to actual in three different categories. The first category represents routine operations and maintenance, and at year-end, O&M was under budget by about 4%, which equates to about $140,000. The majority of this, well, there was some savings in labor, which was offset by increased utility and chemical costs. The second graph represents non-routine operations and maintenance, which is under budgeted levels at year-end at 77%, or $350,000. This mostly relates to HCP and pigging efforts, which I believe are going to be ramping up in the next year. And I'm sure Mark or Jeff can speak to those. The third graph represents capital outlay. And capital outlay is under budget by 73%, or approximately $742,000 as a result of three projects. The perimeter fencing project, the SCADA system, and the sixth rack filtration module. And again, Jeff will be discussing all of those with you in his update. The final billings were, we have the final settlement, and there will be a credit of approximately $192,000, which will be distributed with the January billings. And we're still finalizing that, but it looks like it's going to be about $192,000. This concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for our speaker?
No.
Thank you for the report.
Thank you.
Moving on to 5B.
No, update will be done by Mr. Hutchinson.
excuse me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mark Hutchinson, San Luis Obispo County Department of Public Works. At their July 19th board meeting, the Board of Supervisors did a combination declaration, 501 acre feet of surplus water, and an amount of emergency drought relief water to bring the total to 2,327, all of it to be offered to the Zone 3 agencies under the terms of the contract relative to surplus water. So what the staff done is taken that, calculated the surplus water percentages, which are based on your entitlement percentages, sent the appropriate spreadsheets to the water managers in each of the Zone 3 agency. Those managers look at the total amount and then provide our operations staff with their requested delivery amounts. So the total amount of water that they would like to take as surplus, and then they give us a month-by-month accounting of how they see that water flowing. And then we compare that to the operational capabilities of the plant. Sometimes there's a little back and forth to make it all work for everybody. So that process is underway. At the same time, we've been working with our plant operators in the TAC, understanding that when you add up all of that water, it is deliverable, but a major amount of it's needed in the summer, and that exceeds the capacity of the system to deliver that amount. So what we're doing, you heard Craig mention that the plant's running at 6.6 million gallons a day. That's a plant that, you know, is designed for 6 million gallons a day. So the operators are doing a good job of making as much Lopez water available through that pipeline as we can possibly produce and deliver. And then I'm aware that at the operational level, staff from Grover Beach and Pismo and our staff continue to try to figure out how to maximize flows through the various turnouts. I've talked to a couple of TAC members and city representatives. We're going to be wrestling with how to make the contract amendments work with the HCP, specifically the idea that the draft downstream release schedule that the HCP has in it now essentially establishes a separate carryover account for that downstream water. And the way the contracts for the municipalities are set up, the majority of our surplus water comes from downstream releases that were not made because they're not needed. So we're going to have to work through that. And I've got some good feedback from a couple members of the TAC on some ideas on how to get a bit more sophisticated with our approach and see if we can continue to generate surplus water. So you'll hear about those issues. The board specifically wanted to make sure that the negotiations, the formal negotiations on contracts are between the district and the individual agencies, because that's who the contract's with, but with close coordination with the advisory committee, so that you all can discuss things as they go along and help move that conversation forward. So with that, we're moving ahead with the surplus water. I've attached the board resolution and the board meeting minutes so that we could see their discussion and then their results on the supplemental recommendation. So things are happening in Zone 3 at the staff level and through the TAC, and we'll continue to report to your committee as things develop.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. Not a question, and I think you already described it, but I want to ask because I'm not fully clear. Is it seemed like the staff report that was presented to the Board of Supervisors in regards to the declaration of surplus water perhaps deviated from the recommendation that the advisory board had made. I was wondering if you could explain what that deviation was, and then based on where we are now, are we still at that same level of deviation?
Well, we went back and looked at the minutes for exactly what the advisory committee's recommendation was, and I think some of the confusion might stem from the fact that there was a recommendation made with several points. It was seconded, it was discussed, and then withdrawn, and a second recommendation was made that was very focused on the surplus water issue, and then a second part on moving ahead with the low reservoir response plan. So the committee did discuss a number of issues relative to surplus water, but ultimately that the recommendation that you adopted was the one that was reported in the Board of Supervisors staff report. As I recall, I believe Member Wallace made a recommendation and Jim seconded it. There was a lot of discussion, and then we broke for clarification. That was withdrawn, and then I believe Member Vardis made an attempt at a new recommendation, and it was very much focused down, and that's the one that the committee actually adopted.
And that's the one that the board approved as well?
What the board did, after staff reviewed the situation, and especially with county council, is said, well, we want to do the 23-27, but we're going to have to break it up into two parts. They wanted to go with a what we'll call a traditional way of calculating surplus water. That's where the 501 came out, but fully understood the actual physical situation and essentially used the board's power under their emergency drought declaration to make the additional stored water available to the agencies. And the intent there is to make sure that if there is any limitation on surplus, it's because of the plumbing, not because of the paperwork.
Okay, thank you. Any other board members have questions for Mr. Hutchinson on this item? Sounds like you might have a question.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear that the motion that John and I originated didn't get voted on, because it seems to me that the clear intent of this committee was that we should continue with the method of calculation which had been in force since 2010, and that the amount of water which we were asking the board to declare would be 2,327 acre feet, not less than 2,327 of surplus water, not a combination of surplus and then some makeup drought water declared by the board. It leaves us in a situation where if we're unable to come to terms on contract amendments by next April, that we may have lost quite a lot of surplus water. And we'll have to go to the board of supervisors to ask to be made whole again. And it makes water resource planning difficult, if not impossible, not knowing ahead of time what your resources are. So I'm quite disappointed to find out that we didn't follow through on that motion.
Well, you know, my memory serves that we came up with a motion. It was discussed.
I think that may be where this has to be settled. I don't know. I guess the minutes and the tape and so forth from the last meeting are what they are. But looking forward, I think the main thing is to get together with the county to address those contractual requirements and what the users of the water really need. Given this bad situation that we're going through, we need to look ahead now that we've had this education and work that out for the future.
Ms. Board Member Lucy?
Actually, I was happy to see that the Board of Supervisors did adopt staff recommendations. The staff works for the Board of Supervisors, but also, too, is to not deviate from the contracts. And I sat in that meeting, and then I watched it three more times, and what was being proposed was deviance from the contracts, which would have put us into litigation. The vote that you're speaking of, there was a 4-1 vote on that motion that was made at that Zone 3 when the proposal was written out. Okay, I think it was very wise of the board to take county council's recommendations to not deviate from the contracts. The reason why there was a difference in calculations is, one, is that we were worried about spillage in Lopez, and right now we're worried about sucking mud here. So of course you're going to look at different calculations. You're going to try to minimize harm. But if people are planning their usage based on surplus unreliable sources, I would have to question their technique of planning. So I was quite content, and Oceana was quite content, that the County Board of Supervisors did respect staff's recommendations and comply with the contracts.
Thank you. Any other comments on this item? So it sounds like the way we're...
I'd actually like to say...
Okay.
I just want to make sure that whatever discussions go on, that it comes back through Zone 3, because that's the only place that Ag has a voice in this. And obviously,
the management of this resource is critical to our industry.
Duly noted. So it sounds like what's focused now is to deal with the contracts and see how those can be refined so that they better reflect the needs of the different parties.
Yeah, that's the Zone 3 agencies always have the ability to come to the county and talk about the contract. There's no time limitations, no windows or anything on that. And as I've been able to tell over the years, the county's always been open to that. There's some thought that whatever changes we make in contracts needs to be unanimous among the agencies, the contracting agencies. So that entails a lot of discussion and compromise and whatnot. We're hopeful. I mean, I'm hopeful that there's a way to better account for surplus water. And one of the focus things is to create individual accounts for agencies and a way in certain years, at least when it's available, to take water that has no other use and put it into those accounts. Excuse me.
Okay. Any other comments on this or questions about this item? So are we going to talk about HCP status? 5B, is that the next discussion?
Yeah,
we kind of switched it a little bit.
Fine,
yeah.
So
yeah.
We're now on item B, HCP status, and that's also Mark Hutchinson.
Okay. Again, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works. This is going to sound good on the tape. The consultant selection panel has almost completed its work. They've gone through the proposals, interviewed two consultants. There's a presentation and interview process, ranked those consultants, asked for cost and scope packages from the top-ranked consultants. That selection panel will look at those proposals, detailed cost, scope, work, and discuss that with the TAC, make a recommendation. I'm hoping that that happens fast enough so that the staff can take that recommendation, negotiate a draft contract, and then bring the whole thing back to the advisory committee, and then get your recommendation on the consultant for the hydrogeologic report and work on the HCP, and then based on your recommendation, take that contract to the Board of Supervisors. So your next meeting is 2 months out, so that gives us about 6 weeks to get through that and get it on the agenda. And we're
going to hear some of these NOAA graphics on precipitation, and thought I'd take it a step further as we head into potentially an El Nino year. We keep hearing it's going to be an El Nino, it might not be an El Nino, it might be an El Nino, but a baby El Nino. So wanted to put some graphics on the table and start monitoring them and see how this plays out for the upcoming winter. The first graphic in your packet is from the U.S. Drought Monitor, and I really like this graphic. It shows the four time series of the drought and how it started. It obviously started before September 2013, but you can see a message we've been carrying back to Sacramento and to funding agencies is that San Luis Obispo County was sort of the epicenter for the drought. So a year ago in 2013, we were where the higher level of drought started. And you can see it started to spread in December of 2013. It spread into the Central Valley. By June of 2014, it had almost taken up the entire state. Basically, in September of this year, the entire state is in, I believe it's 84%, is in a status of extreme drought. So that's a graphic that we take back to Sacramento. Like I said, we're arguing for funding that we have special needs here in the county because of how prolonged and how hard we've been hit by this drought. The next graphic is a temperature forecast, and I haven't really included those in many updates, but I wanted to this time. It shows going out October, November, December, and then January, February, March, and this is important because temperature affects evaporation of our reservoirs, groundwater pumping because of evapotranspiration on agricultural crops. So it definitely impacts our water resources here locally. And in the past, especially this last year, we've been seeing above average temperature predictions, and I think we've had them. It's been quite warm throughout the entire county. Even the typical foggy coastal areas have been quite warm. Now they're showing an equal chance of temperature, so we're kind of seeing a return to normalcy, which is actually pretty nice to see, because we've had for at least a year above average temperature predictions, and I think we've realized those predictions. The final graphic is precipitation forecast, and I think this is the one that everyone most cares about. And you can see at the bottom, above average, the A is above average, 40% in Texas and the Southwest, 33% almost getting up to us. It looks like the cutoff is about Ventura County, and I think this is the graph that says we might get an El Nino, but it'd be a baby El Nino if we get one, because you're going to see they're definitely showing rain above average hitting California, but it's not going to persist throughout most of California. Obviously, this is looking out October, November, December, January, February, and March. All of last year, we saw below normal precipitation forecasts. I believe in 2013, it was below normal precipitation forecast. So this is definitely a change from what we've seen in the last 2 years. And like I said, it's going to be interesting. I'll have these in all of our agenda packets moving forward. It'll be interesting to see if we can get that line. It's a guess, and obviously rain doesn't fall on a straight line. So we should see rain here. If this was to come true, I think we would still see rain. But it'll be interesting to see if, as we move into our November meeting, this line has shifted at all in an advantageous position for us. So with that, I'd entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Diodati. Any questions for Mr. Diodati from the board? I have one question. Looking at the first graphic that's entitled U.S. Drought Monitor, and it shows since September 2013 was extreme drought, and then December 2013 it started to expand. Now, is that just based on reduced level of precipitation, or does that also factor in, let's say, some type of reduced level of redundancy or storage of
it's precipitation
it's just
driven.
Precipitation
yeah.
driven.
Okay. We actually saw we had a little rainstorm a while back up in that was like in Monterey and Big Sur, and that part of our county moved out of extreme drought, and then the next update it went back into it. So it's very responsive to precipitation.
Oh, that's very telling graphic, I think.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly I can add on. I was privileged, I guess, to travel to Ventura Tuesday and spend the better part of the day listening to the National Weather Service weather forecast at, believe it or not, a flood planning meeting put on by the Department of Water Resources. National Weather Service develops the maps and graphs that John used, and their story is exactly as John told us. We did get the weather forecaster to delve a little bit more into El Nino and what that really means. They're seeing sea temperatures continue to rise, and along the equator, the depth of the hot water is sinking into the ocean, which is consistent with an El Nino, but they're not seeing a response from the atmosphere to that warm water. So, you know, it's still technically a young science and El Nino prediction, so we essentially got the message that that's unusual, i.e. we haven't seen that case scenario. We'll see that in the low reservoir response plan, which is a continuation of the drought. I thought it was interesting that at that multi-county meeting, the group of public works officials decided to basically go with John Lindsay's latest column that talks about tarantulas and the farmer's almanac as maybe a better or more accurate tool at this point. So this is something we're going to continue to track and continue to, again, plan for the reasonable worst-case climate scenario.
Thank you for that.
I'll add one more thing. I am looking forward to seeing how this plays out with the NOAA predictions, because they've been, obviously they had somewhat of an easy job the last few years by just stamping us with below average and not having any rain. Last month they said Southern California was going to see and the Southwest was going to see rain, and it's like, what, they're going to see rain? But what happened was we're up to Polo on hurricanes, and that is bringing a lot of rain into Southern California, Arizona, and New Mexico. So this model is fairly accurate, so it'll be interesting to see how accurate they'll be with this El Nino prediction.
You know, John, NASA has some really good graphics and charts on their site, too, that they've been putting out, and they've been keeping track of the reservoirs that have gone dry in the state of California, and they're pretty substantial. But these are good graphs.
Thank you. Any other comments on this item? Okay, moving on. Next on the agenda is the capital projects update, starting off with the quarterly update.
It'll be done by Jeff Lee from Public Works.
Good evening. As John said, I'm Jeff Lee with Public Works. I wanted to give you a quick update on four capital projects that we're moving forward on. The first is the sixth rack. I've been updating you on the last several months on this. We have issued a purchase order as of September 5th to the Paul Corporation for the actual equipment, which you had had budgeted for in last fiscal year. So based upon the contracts, the shop drawings are anticipated to be submitted to us in late October. Which then once we review and approve those, we'll start a 6-month fabrication timeline, and which kind of leads towards an installation and construction and startup late in this fiscal year. So I'll keep you updated as that moves forward. The next project is the perimeter security fence. As I reported last month, we did award the contract to Spies Construction. Based upon some bird surveys that needed to have been done in September, if we started in September, we were actually going to issue the notice to proceed as of October 1st. So you will start to see construction on the perimeter fence along the eastern boundary and then along the north side of the terminal reservoir on the east side of Orchid Road starting as of October 1st. It should take approximately 6 to 8 weeks to complete that construction. So the next project is the Turnout SCADA project, and we are continuing to work through a kind of a discussion and a decision matrix with regards to use of cells and versus radio equipment. And we do anticipate agendizing that discussion at either the October or the November TAC meeting to where there will be a full discussion of that. One of some of the items we're looking at is a cost benefit versus permitting versus visual aspects, and then obviously some operational characteristics of both. So then the last project I'll speak with you tonight is the equipment replacement plan. As we've been going through on a monthly basis, the computer equipment replacement plan we'll talk about in the next item, which is agendized. But we are also going through and auditing other parts of the plant to make sure that a equipment replacement plan is developed and then in progress. The first part of that is an audit of the variable frequency drives on the pumps, and that purchase order has been issued, and so the results, I'll bring those back probably to the TAC first, but they will be included in the overall equipment replacement plan as that continues to move forward for your use in budgeting for future items. And then I do have an update on the computer replacement project, but as noted on the agenda, that is the next item. So I will be right back.
Well,
unless there's any questions.
Yeah.
I just want to ask about the fence that you're talking about on along Orchid Road. Is there going to be any disruption on Orchid Road?
The fence along Orchid Road does not get changed, does not get modified. We do tie into both sides. The fence along Orchid does have a 6-foot chain link with the razor wire on top, if I remember correctly. We then tie into both sides and then continue off-road from those points. So along Orchid Road, no changes.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions, Mr. Wallace?
Jeff had a question on the arrangements that various agencies are making for the Turnout SCADA system. And has the department finished your coordination with all the agencies on how that will intertie with different agency SCADA systems, in particular Apple?
And then other sensors for the equipment can then be kind of programmed right into the plans. So we've gotten to the point to where once that box is determined, the equipment fits in the box that we've preliminarily designed.
So should we wait until after the TAC meeting to finalize this with you?
If you have information now, please send it.
Okay.
So yeah, and then we'll be able to make sure it gets included.
Okay. You want to talk? Are you done, or do you have any other?
Unless there's any other questions.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. then on to the next item. So, which, well, welcome back.
Great segue, by the way.
Thank you, appreciate that. So, this is an item on the Lopez Skeda computer replacement project. So, this is actually at the plant itself, the computer equipment that basically runs and operates the plant on a daily basis. I will start off presentation noting that exhibits B and C for this item were actually inadvertently scanned and paginated into item 5, so under pages 10 and 11, rather than item 6. So if you're looking for attachments B and C, they're a little bit earlier in your package. So with that being said, at the I believe it was the July at the excuse me the August TAC meeting, we did present an item to transfer $75,000 from the Turnout SCADA project into the computer equipment replacement project to fund replacement of 8 computers, hardware, and then updating WonderWare, the operation software, at the plant, and then installation by the county. And the TAC did recommend approval of that. I can go into the reasons why we're replacing the computers if you have issues, but basically it's outdated equipment. We were having issues with the operational software getting updates. So the WonderWare software that operates the plant is being purchased and upgraded with this project, going on to new computers, and the funding for this comes out of is proposed to be transferred from the Turnout SCADA project. There is adequate funding in that project to continue through the end of the fiscal year. And as shown on Exhibit C, we would propose to effectively replenish that $75,000 in next fiscal year's budget, so that whatever funding is necessary to complete the Turnout SCADA project gets funded in next year's budget. So with that, there is a cost summary in Exhibit A that shows the cost of the software and then also the cost of the hardware. I did have a conversation with Member Bright this morning with regards to the cost of the equipment. It is probably a little bit higher than an average computer because we are proposing to use solid-state hardware drives, which will make the system last a little bit longer and operate smoother with the WonderWare software. So unless there's any questions, I would be looking to seek a recommendation that your committee support the replacement of the existing SCADA equipment and then using a transfer of $75,000 from the Turnout SCADA project into the Lopez Water Treatment Plant Equipment Replacement Plan.
Thank you. Question. What's the difference between a regular hard drive and a solid-state hard drive?
That's a great question. All I know is that the solid-state hardware operates faster, stronger, and is more bulletproof. So,
okay.
According to my IT personnel.
Okay.
It doesn't move.
It doesn't spin?
It doesn't spin.
Yeah. But it's still a hard drive.
It's like a jump drive.
So it's just like a bunch of RAM? Or
it's like a jump drive. It's like a big jump drive.
Okay, so it's all just chips. Just
big memory stick.
Big memory stick, okay. Greg?
I had a question.
Yes.
Jeff, same old question on some of the expenses. The update on the WonderWare software, I know that WonderWare is pretty expensive, and we have a current version of WonderWare, and we use that. Is there a significant difference in the upgrade here?
There is. Unfortunately, the existing software and the existing hardware are not compatible with new hardware. So basically the WonderWare had stopped updating or stopped providing updates, very similar to Windows XP, to where the plant wasn't able to get operational updates except by getting new hardware equipment. And so there was apologize for using the incorrect term, but basically there's a compatibility issue between the computer hardware that's currently existing and being able to operate the system on the new WonderWare. So basically we needed to update WonderWare in order to continue efficiently operating the plant, and then because of that not being able to run on the old computers, we need to update the computers as well. And those were, the computers are approximately 8.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. So action items that do not require subsequent Board of Supervisors action, the low-level reservoir release plan status. Mr. Hutchinson or Mr. Diodati, who's covering this? Okay.
Yeah, Mark Hutchinson again. Low reservoir response plan status. Quickly, by way of background, in the 2008-2009 timeframe, Zone 3 through the TAC and County Staff Advisory Committee and ultimately to all of our governing boards adopted the IDRIS, the Interim Downstream Release Schedule. And that was the how we're going to operate the dam and the reservoir and mostly the downstream releases in a way that didn't waste all of our water and didn't land us in jail for Endangered Species Act violations. A fairly comprehensive document included installation of a lot of the automated stream gauges and things that we see currently in operation to manage the downstream release. A chapter in that document is the Low Reservoir Response Plan. In its 2008-2009 version, it's best described as establishing the whys and the whens and the whos and then laying out a course of a plan to make the plan. So at your advisory committee's last meeting, two meetings ago actually, you formally adopted a recommendation to begin serious work on developing the details of the low reservoir response plan. And the TAC had already been discussing those kinds of issues, and that work is ongoing. It brings us to where we are today with a staff report that has three recommendations. And I'm hopeful that we can combine those into two recommendations and perhaps save a couple of months in the process. So before I go much further, the first recommendation is to endorse a contract, which the county would do through something called a purchase order with Water Systems Consulting to provide the technical support to update the low reservoir response plan for the reservoir. That cost estimate is in your staff report at just at $20,000. There is no budget adjustment necessary because there is a subaccount under HCP for IDRIS work and development. And since the LRRP is a chapter in the IDRIS, then we have sufficient funding in that account. It's essentially leftover money from purchasing and installing the stream gauges and all the data automation equipment. So we do have that $20,000 sitting there and is available for the low reservoir response plan. WSC, by way of background, is a local water planning consulting firm. They are under contract to NCMA, the Northern Cities Management Area. So that's the three cities and Oceano Community Services District. And they oversee those meetings and then prepare the technical reports, manage the subconsultants to do their annual groundwater report. So in order to get things moving, and because they were already under contract to NCMA, which is most but not all of Zone 3, they were set to work on providing technical analysis, and we'll see some of their work tonight. But this was not formally discussed at the TAC. This is breaking news, so I polled the TAC via email to see if there were any objection, and there was not. It would be more appropriate that, although it's almost all of the same agencies, the WSC's work's paid for out of the Zone 3 accounts rather than out of the NCMA accounts, just to keep things straight. So that's our first recommendation. We intended to bring you an update on the status of the low reservoir response plan and then potentially schedule a special meeting to actually consider it and perhaps make recommendations to the board. What I'll do now, though, is go through the PowerPoint presentation, and you'll see that as the TAC and the working group that includes agricultural representatives has moved through this, sort of the schedule's changed a bit. And I think we'll be able to keep this moving. I did pass out a copy of the PowerPoint in those little bitty unreadable things if you like to take notes. And then this is actually the public review draft of the low reservoir response plan in its more developed view, which we'll talk about in this PowerPoint, which again, the basic PowerPoint was prepared by WSC and used at the TAC. I just make that because bubbles are not my style necessarily. Oops. Let's see if we can get moving. So the low reservoir response plan, it's a component of the interim downstream release schedule. And the point is to establish the downstream releases and the municipal deliveries when the reservoir storage drops below predetermined levels, in our case, a trigger level of 20,000 acre feet in storage, and in an attempt to preserve enough water for municipal deliveries for a minimum of 3 to 4 years under ongoing drought conditions. This is just a graphic that shows the reservoir historic levels with where the reservoir started out prior to the 89 to 92 or 87 to 92 drought period and where we started out in this drought period hydrologically, a bit less water in storage. So some concerns with that. This is the graph that county staff prepares and that the TAC uses to do the recommendations and water planning. Try to go through this really quick. The solid green
line. Excuse me, Mark. I just have to interrupt. I just need to step away from the room and be right back and keep going with your presentation.
Okay. The solid green line right there is actual reservoir levels. And I think this graph, just to be illustrative, is back from the beginning of August, so we don't have the September one up here, but it would be very similar. I'm trying to get my arrow to work. And then the dashed line is sort of the predicted water levels based on historic use of the reservoir. These blue bars down here represent average rainfall over the typical 10-year period. So not the last 10 years, but if you look back, and the National Weather Service does this thing to help you make these predictions, and they say if you take a typical 10-year period and average that, how much do we get rainfall in the area by month, August, September, October? So if we had that average rainfall numbers, we would expect the reservoir to get down to about where it is now and then start responding due to those 10-year average rainfall numbers. The concern, of course, is what if it doesn't rain? And if it doesn't rain, we could project that line forward, and it's going to hit the magic 20,000 acre foot in storage sometime around the beginning of December. And based on the work in 08, 09, the TAC determined that they could get at least 2 to 3 years of water out of the reservoir in a drought period based on the 87 to 92 event. If we start taking action at 20,000 acre feet. So that's where the 20,000 acre feet came from, and that's what's driving the work now on the low reservoir response plan. A lot of work's been done so that should the reservoir hit 20,000 acre feet, the TAC would be in a position to make recommendations right at that point. They'll have the plan in front of them, and they'll decide how to move forward. We'll talk a little bit about December 1st and some of the conversations at the TAC about while it would trigger the low reservoir response plan, would it trigger the measures in the plan? Two different things. And that's going to depend on what sort of a rainfall season we're looking at, what's happened. We'll talk about that in a bit. So the low reservoir response plan goes into effect when the reservoir drops below 20,000 acre feet and the Board of Supervisors had declared an emergency that includes Lopez Reservoir. So that could be countywide or just South County or just the reservoir. But you need those two factors for this plan to be opened up. Initially, what the low reservoir response plan would be that there would be a reduction in the entitlement water deliveries, the amount of water that each agency is planning on taking. We would reduce downstream releases. Currently under the contracts, unreleased downstream water at the end of the water year becomes surplus and it's made available to the agencies. The LRRP would say that that would no longer occur for the time that the LRRP is in effect. However, an agency would have whatever their allocation is under the low reservoir response plan, and if they did not use it in any year, that amount for that agency, rather like where we want to get to with the contracts, would carry over. It would be subject to evaporation losses, which is a calculation that we could do just to make sure that we're not oversubscribing the reservoir. That provision was put in there initially because of the situation with CSA 12. If we got to a situation where there's just not enough water in Lopez for agencies to use, all of our member agencies have other sources, maybe a little state water or groundwater. CSA 12 is dependent on Lopez only. So if Lopez shuts off, CSA 12 pretty much shuts off, pending any sort of emergency arrangements that we could make through the state or whatnot. So the initial idea was we need to make a way for CSA 12 to be able to build a little bit of an account and maybe get one or two more years of CSA 12 water out of the reservoir, whereas everybody else is then using the alternate sources that we're preserving on the site. Those are kind of extreme thinking, but at the same time, that means that the other agency should also be able to take advantage of that situation. We don't know what the future holds. The drought could end, or it could continue, or it could end in Northern California and not here, and so this provides the agencies the flexibility to understand what their tools are per capita, which is DWR's latest, they call lifeline amount. We would be at 35% under the diversions and be able to supply that amount of water. And of course, at 4,000, we're at minimum pool, and in theory, the system would not be able to deliver water. I should, at that point, say that one more year of drought, and we'll be doing some more detailed surveys to see if it's 4,000, 4,001, or 3,950. You know, if the drought continues, then we'll be spending some money to look at the reservoir and the system under a magnifying glass to really narrow down what that number really and truly is. On the agriculture side, the reductions look like this. Now, the percentage reductions are from the 4,200. We worked with representatives of the Agricultural Committee in a very productive meeting several days ago at the City of Rio Grande with the TAC to come up with this concept. And you might wonder why 3,800. In the last couple of years, that is very close to what we've released downstream. And in talking to the farmers, that's just right there. 3,800 is tight for some of the guys that are still having to depend on surface stream flow to make it, and those guys were at the table. But we think 3,800 is the minimum number to maintain agriculture in the Upper Valley as it currently exists. So we should not be seeing impacts to agriculture in the first couple of years. So you'll see there's not a consistent, as they're in the municipalities where you'd be working with the community to institute more conservation measures. This is, rather than doing 4,200 the first year, move that to the second year. Then we went all the way to the fourth year, 5,000 acre feet, and said, what's the average dry season inflow into the reservoir? Because for environmental regulatory purposes, we're in good shape. We think if we're releasing during the summer critical months, whatever water comes in goes out, so that the reservoir itself is not impacting endangered species downstream. Essentially, if the creek grows dry, it would be because of natural conditions. We saved that amount of water, about 300, and then pushed everything else back up into the third year, essentially. This allows the farmers to plan well in advance for conditions that might develop. So we look at this wonderful graph, and you can start to understand the challenge that's going to be for the TAC and your water planners if the drought continues and we move ahead. You see four colored lines there. They're all assuming essentially the same percentage reductions, I believe, and at reservoir levels for downstream and municipal, but they're all based on slightly different hydrologic conditions. So for instance, you see the green line there at the top. If we take the average water years, 2011, so the last 3 years, 11, 12, 12, 13, 13, 14, average that number, how much came in the reservoir. And then at 20,000 acre feet, we went to entitlements and reduced downstream. In 15, we went here and we're here. And the drought continued as it has on the last 3 years of average. We get the green line, and you see we get 3 years, we have water. 4 years, a little bit of water. Take the other scenario, the red line. What if last year repeats itself? for 1, 2, 3 more years. That's the result of these same reductions. And then in between, you have a couple of different averages. The last 2 years averaged, and then the gray line always goes all the way back to the 87-92 drought, takes the 98 or 99 through 90 scenario and applies that to the reservoir to see how fast the reservoir drops under certain reduction scenarios. So understanding that, we have this decision tree. And it was just pointed out to me in the staff report. I attached an old staff report that has a good synopsis of what the LRRP is about, and that staff report had an attachment which I missed. And that flow chart was a very simple one that was the plan to do the plan. Now you have the real flow chart, which is the plan. And this is pretty basic decision tree. Reservoir hits 20,000 acre feet. The board's declared an emergency. The LRRP is enacted. We go to the TAC. The TAC pulls out these numbers and looks at them. Now, here's the first thing I have to point out. If this reservoir hits 20,000 acre feet in December, then that first meeting of the TAC is on that Thursday. The TAC will be looking at these weather forecasts. So you're not the Board of Supervisors. And someone said, well, why don't we just go to the board? Well, that means every time that the TAC sees a change and says we need to do this, you know, we're 8 weeks out to a decision at the board. So we need to be able to get through the TAC, potentially call your advisory committee members for a special meeting with the appropriate notice, make the decision, and then allow a window for someone to appeal that to the Board of Supervisors. And if that happened, then we would probably do what's called a core agenda change to our board and get that decision to them as soon as possible so that the TAC has the flexibility to essentially make recommendations to the staff and operate the reservoir in response to the hydrologic conditions that we're seeing. That, in a nutshell, is what the LRRP is doing. Now, what you see here is the idea of separating any unused water into individual members' accounts so that they can plan their way through the drought with this water source and any others that they might have. Evaporation losses is kind of interesting. You may have heard WSC went back through the records. Our staff, Craig, who left, and his group actually scientifically calculate, measure how much water is evaporating off of the reservoir at any given time by actually putting water into a great big flat pan and then very, very carefully measuring how much water is leaving. In an average dry year, we lose about 77 inches off the reservoir. Now, say an agency carried over 200 acre feet, they're not going to get dinged for 77 inches of that. But you put more water in the reservoir gets slightly bigger, and it's that little bit of additional around that causes additional evaporation. So it wouldn't be huge amounts, but it's a calculable number, and agencies want to be able to account for that in their water planning. We essentially don't want to be creating water that's stored on paper and it isn't really in the reservoir. Now, this is going to affect your decision tonight because it's changed from what I was thinking and I think what the TAC was thinking. We are right here at the second flag, right there. The idea is that rather than have your advisory committee schedule a special meeting to endorse or not endorse this low reservoir response plan, is that we go from here. Actually, I'm at the first green one on the bottom. That's where we're at. We would go from here to each of the member agencies, so the city councils and CSD boards, and the Board of Supervisors acting as on behalf of CSA 12 would look at the LRRP and decide whether and how they would enact it. We might get some comments, suggested changes, and whatnot. And then it would come back to your advisory committee with the agencies having enacted it in maybe different versions or different methodologies. We would look at how all of that came out. Advisory committee would say, okay, based on what these agencies are doing, you know, maybe everybody says, yeah, we're on board, let's do it exactly that way, and maybe it's an easy choice. But back to the advisory committee, the second green flag on the bottom, and then off to the Board of Supervisors this December 9th or 16th, acting as the flood control district. You're wondering why are we doing it this way? It's because in order to do that thing where we say at 20,000 acre feet we're not going to do the downstream surplus, and we're also going to let each agency or have each agency create their accounts, that's a departure from the contracts. And we think we can do that by resolution, but we would need each agency to adopt a resolution that says, yes, we agree to that. And that's a lot faster method than having a lot of attorneys involved in trying to amend the contracts between now and December 1st to get this thing adopted. But we believe we can do that. I've talked to our counsel, and it's based on the premise that you and I may have a contract that says certain things, but if we both agree to do something different, you know, we're the ones that signed the contract, we get to do that as long as there's no other parties to the contract. So if all the parties of the contract agree by resolution under the drought emergency to enact these different procedures, then we would be good to go. So going back to your staff report, I think where we're at now is I need to know if the advisory committee has any significant concerns with us asking each agency to go ahead and review this low reservoir response plan and perhaps adopt an accompanying resolution to agree, assuming everybody else does, and then bring it back to you guys for one final check and then off to the board in December. Certainly, and put together by a WSC on their behalf. And then, again, the tag, I pulled the tag via email, and they were comfortable releasing it as a public review draft. And then there's a challenge for each public works director to try to explain this to each city council, what we're doing and what the really what the effect is on each agency. That's one of the challenges for each agency, to look at those reduction numbers and be able to tell the individual city council, what does that mean for our city? How does this fit into other water sources? What levels of conservation are we talking about? Is it feasible? Is it achievable? We know what the result is from the graphs, is that if we're able to do it, how far we can go in an extreme drought situation. If the drought continues but it's not extreme, we also have some sense of how far we can go with that. So those are some challenges. I suspect that county staff and the various public works directors and agency directors will all be working together to be able to accurately tell the story to each city council and each community as we move forward.
Will the conservation strategy that's further refined, if possible, with the HCP, once we get through the completion of that, could that have any effect on this or not?
Well, not in the next couple of years, certainly. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be one of the challenges. And it's interesting that the LRRP takes a certain approach. It was our job at the county, because we have the environmental folks, to look at how this, how does this compare to what our Endangered Species Act responsibilities are. And that's a little bit where, the downstream release doesn't simply match natural conditions. It's been supplementing downstream flows above natural conditions. And so we take it at 5,000 acre feet. We're simply, during those critical dry months, releasing inflow numbers. So there's a fair argument that the district is not in any way unnaturally reducing downstream releases. We've just got to a point where that's all that's left. To give you an idea what that means, by the way, we have downstream releases now at about 6 CFS, but our inflows are less than 1. So if this reservoir was at 5,000 acre feet, having creek flow past the Trout Farm Bridge or Rodriguez Road would be interesting to see if it would go that far, but that does mimic the natural condition, and it reflects the reality that we can't release water that we just don't have.
So, Mark, are you willing to appear before councils and boards to make this presentation?
Yes, absolutely. And certainly if your board endorses the contract with WSC, we'd also rely on their expertise. And my hope is that the TAC members, including the county, would appear as a team at each city council and CSD board.
Well, I like the idea. I really do appreciate that. I like the idea of having my public works director talking to my council about this and approaching it from how it's going to affect my city and our residents. So I certainly would support, I have no problem supporting the recommendations 1 and 2. I have no problem with that, and I appreciate it.
And then the third item, to instead of just having one special meeting, that there be these sequencing of meetings with each of the each of the cities.
I think so.
Okay, and the community services district. Any other comments or questions? We'll go with Mr. Talley first.
Yeah, I guess. Again, I guess back to Ag's place at the table. When I'm just concerned that if there's people propose dramatic alteration of the downstream release, when do we get our say on that?
It would be my hope that we would have Ag representatives at each council meeting first. And
it's
I
hard
think
to get farmers to show up to meetings, you know.
It's true, but your alternative is that county staff also has a duty to speak for county residents, including the farmers, in this situation. And I suppose ultimately, though, we're doing all of this, and then we're taking our individual actions and the advisory committee's endorsement to the Board of Supervisors. In the minds of does this have to go to each council or not go to each council? But when we saw the degree of reductions that would need to be taken, then the TAC members who are representatives of councils and boards said this definitely needs to go before my council before it gets to the Board of Supervisors. It needs to get to the advisory committee with the ability to make a fully informed recommendation before that. So when you lay out where it has to go, that's where the schedule came from in doing it that way.
And then I guess the last question I would have is more of a technical question about who needs to go to the meetings. You know, Vard Aketa and I are, you know, the official members of this committee, the official Ag representatives. Does it need to be one of us who would show up at a council meeting, or does that matter? Could it be any Ag representative?
Well, I suppose I would defer to the committee itself here as to what their recommendation would be on that. And I can't speak for any individual city council or board, although my experience with all of them is that they hear citizen input, and especially someone representing a group of farmers, you know, they take those recommendations and those thoughts quite seriously.
Okay, and I mean, it would certainly be my intent to go to these meetings. My only situation is that I've got a pretty heavy travel schedule starting in about 2 weeks. So, you know, and I need to check in with Vard about his schedule as well.
When were you looking to kick this off, starting these meetings? And you want to do that with the Ag folks first?
Well, the meetings would be at the three city councils and at the Oceano CSD, and then likely some of the members of CSA 12. There's a CSD, Avila CSD is there. And it would be important then that the group or county staff at least would attend any of the other agencies in CSA 12, or recommend that they come to the Avila CSD meeting to hear what's going on and give their input through CSA 12. So how that can get on the schedules of each of the city councils is going to have to be each agency. We plan on taking it to the Board of Supervisors representing all of CSA 12, understanding that that works if the we can get to Avila CSD first. I'm looking at my calendar here. Try to remember what the date is. I believe it's October 28th at the Board of Supervisors. I have time reserved for CSA 12. We kind of had this hope that we could get to CSA 12 or get to the board via CSA 12 sooner rather than later so that the agencies could see whether or not the board itself, sitting as the county, was on board, not sitting as the flood control district. But we need to accommodate my board schedule and also see the ability to get recommendations from CSA 12 before the Board of Supervisors adopts a resolution on their behalf.
So it sounds like we can work and try to adjust the schedule to accommodate your schedules and other person's schedules as well.
Well, and I guess if it's okay with the group, I mean, there are four farmers that I think are very well qualified to speak for our community. And, you know, I guess if Bart and I can't be there, would people accept Gary Kawara and Tom Aketa, I think, are two very qualified farmers that could also be there as well. Yes.
I have no concerns with that.
I don't have any concerns with that at all.
You know, we've had at two levels. We had three meetings with the ag representatives. We had ag representatives at NCMA here a couple of months ago, and alerted them to the issue with groundwater decline. And then we've had two meetings of the TAC wherein Brian and other ag members attended. And there was absolute consensus, I believe, at the last TAC meeting with regard to the downstream release rates that are shown in the current charts that we've seen on the screen. And with that, I think it would, in some way, we should make it clear at these meetings with the governing bodies that at least at the TAC level, it would be absolutely inappropriate to change those downstream release numbers without re-involving agriculture. I don't know if this committee would be willing to commit to that position or not, but certainly that was, in my view, the pretty
good consensus among the groups that, yeah, we do need to do that.
Mark, in the staff report it says that that we approximately have 27,000 acre feet still in the reserve, in the reservoir. Is that correct?
No. Staff report was written at the end of August. The number that we have now
is 3838, top paragraph.
Right.
Currently has approximately 27,000 acre feet. So that's an old report. And so what is it at now?
22,586.
Okay, 22K. Okay, thank you. So I see for ag that what needs to be developed is, I think that the LRRP plan is a good plan and that it covers, you know, everybody, all the stakeholders. But it's when we hit 10 to 15 that ag is going to get hit the hardest. And instead of developing a plan at that point, I'd rather have a plan that's ready to hit the ground running because the plants are not going to wait. You know, you plant a field, you expect to be able to water that field. And so I don't think we have the same amount of time as to going back and forth and developing a paper plan and then, you know, thinking about it for a while and stuff. It's going to be more time sensitive is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, what I think, you know, I can't speak for the TAC because the group really does work through all the numbers and discuss it. You know, for instance, if we hit 20,000 acre feet, I mean, 3,800 is what is needed to keep agriculture in business as they operate now. So we can do that essentially and watching the rate of decline of the reservoir for one, two planting seasons. It may be that things are progressing more rapidly and you essentially see the numbers on the right side start moving up.
Okay.
You know, start moving up the graph. Or more likely, we get some level of rain, some variability in the drought, and then interestingly, that's when the work gets really hard, when that reservoir is wobbling just above and just below 20,000 acre feet. Then the tack's really going to be crunching the numbers and debating with the farmers what's the best thing to do.
And so another thing I'd like to ask you, I need clarification on because I'm not quite understanding, is the evaporation rate. Is there's been talk about taking the water from the reservoir up north, San Luis Reservoir,
yes,
and bringing it down to the Lopez Reservoir. And you're saying that by having it close to the rocks, you know, the evaporation rate is much higher versus keeping it off those rocks, if I understood you correctly, off the walls. You didn't say rocks, but walls, right?
Well,
and that the
yeah.
evaporation rate is running at 77 inches from period to period. Is that a calendar year or something like that, programmatic year, fiscal year?
That's a water year. So. Yeah.
Okay, so... So what is your, has the TAC talked about bringing water down from the reservoir and putting it in Lopez?
Yes. There is, as we speak, we had a state water subcontractor meeting this morning, and last week I met with Pismo Beach in detail as our major state water contractor. So we're guessing calculating is a better number. There's about 710 acre feet of water in Lopez Reservoir today that is essentially state water that's owned by the district. It's there on behalf of the state water contractors connected to the Lopez turnout. So what that means is the reservoir is just a little bit higher and a little bit larger, and that's where the increase in evaporation comes. And the TAC we'll discuss, because we'll bring it up, that we need to calculate evaporation at that point, given that we're talking about second source for Zone 3 members. It's not yet a non-Zone 3 member that would benefit from that water.
I appreciate
okay.
that. I think
Thanks.
It sounds like this is kind of a maybe a separate topic. It's related, but it's
no,
a separate
it's
topic.
Well, the evaporation is just simply the idea that we need to be calculating very carefully at these lower reservoir levels. So if somebody's going to carry water over, mm-hmm. And it makes the reservoir 3 inches taller and adds a quarter acre to the entire surface area, then what's the increased evaporation from one quarter acre at 77 inches, something like that? Actually be far lower numbers, but just so everybody understands where we're at with the reservoir.
Okay. Board member, Lucy, do you have any more questions or comments? Okay. Does anyone else have comments? Mr. Wallace?
Mark, just a couple. I think it would be good for the county to maybe develop a master detailed schedule of when the agency's meetings are and when we anticipate going to the...
Secondly, to receive and file this update and report on the status of the low reservoir response plan. And thirdly, to consider a series of special meetings with the various agencies to discuss and further formulate the low reservoir response plan, and that for those series of meetings there would be a detailed schedule that would be developed and shared with everyone so that schedules can be managed to maximize the level of participation. Do I have a motion for that?
So moved.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
I didn't get the second.
Jim,
thank you.
Mark, before we leave that, just a bit of curiosity here. We're not going to hear that we hit low reservoir response plan levels at 20,700, are we?
That's going to be a decision of the TAC, I think.
Okay.
That's really where the TAC's going to be looking at. You know how it goes. We end up on the trigger date, and we're at 20,712.
There are all kinds of things that talk about that 700 acre feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All kinds.
That was my point, too, of whether our trigger points include, no matter how much state water we have stored in the reservoir, with some of the discussions this morning with state water contractors, how that plays into the trigger points. Whether it does or does not.
Well, it plays into the trigger points. It may. And then the bigger question to bring up at the TAC is with the mix of agencies we have, some having access to state water at least for a year and others not, are there any conversations we need to have about shared benefits or not shared benefits and all kinds of things going on? Also the TAC, I think we'll have representatives of perhaps San Miguelito Mutual Water Company, which is not a Zone 3 contractor but wheels state water through the zone system, whether or not they want to move their stored state water from San Luis Reservoir into Lopez, and then how we would account for that, and what the details would be, delivery schedules and treatment costs, storage costs, all of those kinds of issues.
I was remiss in not opening this up to the public. Is there a member of the public that wanted to speak on this item? Okay, hearing none, thank you. Any other comments, questions in regards to this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 8.
Future agenda items, thank you. This is a placeholder for items that we definitely have pending and warrant discussion. With the drought and the healthy conversations we've had the last few meetings, I've been hesitant to put the flood bar management on the agenda because I didn't want us going late into the night, especially when we're making an important decision. So that's still an item that I'd like to see on the agenda as soon as possible. November, the LLRP's not too heavy of an agenda, then we could see it in November. Otherwise, I'll continue until we have a lighter agenda. The other item is the contract negotiations, and as was discussed earlier, one of the Board of Supervisors' motions was to, in close consultation with the advisory committee, work on the contract negotiations with the member agency. So I have it here. As we work through that process, you will be seeing some future agenda items with what's going on with the contract negotiations. And as Member Talley said, it's an opportunity for AG to have an opinion and provide some input.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Diodati. Moving on to committee member comments. Any comments from any of the members? Mr. Hutchinson?
If there are no committee comments, I want to alert the members that the Board of Supervisors will hold a discussion of water issues in the county relative to the drought. I'm calling it a water summit, but it's not really that. There'll be presentations from our county admin office, county fire, and Office of Emergency Services on what the county's drought response team has done. There'll be a presentation from the Agricultural Commissioner on where we stand with agricultural impacts with a one-year look ahead, and then county public work staff, myself, will do a presentation on the county water systems and other issues that the county's involved with, and then the meeting will end up with our lobbyists from Sacramento and Washington, D.C., doing presentations on legislation, both upcoming and the water bills that were just passed. That will be on October 14th in the afternoon at the County Board of Supervisors chambers.